We want to get back down to the reality of the situation and talk about what happened in the Pirate Bay case this spring. So if the panelists could introduce themselves.
I'm Courtney Perry. I'm a copyright lawyer here in town. I teach at Emory University, teaching a couple IP classes. I apologize for the attire. I had the choice between changing or eating, and food won. usually my lawyer clothes look a little different, but...
Okay.
I'm on my own right now. I used to be with Galanos and Albertson.
Okay. My name is Chris Hoffines. I'm an attorney at Casey Gilson here in Atlanta. I do mostly franchise work, but a big smattering of IP. Summer dress code ended, so these were my lawyer clothes, but now I'm back to the suit. So.
And I'm Brant Howell. I'm with a firm called Fresco & Courtney out of Jackson, Mississippi. I do probably 50% intellectual property and about 50% entertainment law. And, yeah. And incidentally, I'm the only dork wearing a suit at a fantasy convention.
Great costume, by the way.
Appreciate it.
It's very believable.
Yeah.
I guess I'm in the middle, so I go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I guess the first point to start with is to just run down the facts on Pirate Bay real fast. Make sure everybody's on the same page.
Sure.
And then just jump off from there. Anyone? just so everyone's on the same page, Pirate Bay is a Swedish company. It ran a BitTorrent site after no small amount of pressure from various U.S. lawyers that they publicly mocked. they were prosecuted by the Swedish authorities for multiple counts of basically inciting a copyright violation and accessory to copyright violation. I've now forgotten which one of those got dropped. On the second day of the trial, half of those got dropped. Was it the accessories or the inciting? I forgot. All right, well, one of them got dropped. Probably not that important. After another 8 or 9 days of trial, they were found guilty, about $3.5 million in damages, plus some jail time.
If you can get closer to your microphone.
Hello. And then they have now appealed that. In addition, there's some allegations of bias against the presiding judge. Anything else?
One of the big issues that I kept seeing online is a lot of the entertainment people didn't feel the verdict went far enough because pending appeal, the Pirate Bay is still up, which Motion Picture Association of America, I believe, were the ones inciting the suit to begin with. So they weren't real happy about it, but they were happy about at least the verdict. Go ahead.
The Google Bay?
Hmm?
The Google Bay?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
The demonstration of Google being used for basically the same usage of Pirate Bay that went up right when the trial started, basically.
No, I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Yeah, it's more of just an example. Of
okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Are you guys familiar with it?
Not offhand.
There's an open source application that you can do on Google where you can make your own certain type of search and upload it at your own Google hosted section of the website, and basically someone made a search that searched for .torrent files and crossed over the image of the Pirate Bay with Google's colors and called it the Google Bay, and
funny.
There you go.
Which is exactly the example of why the entertainment industry beats their head against the wall until it's bloody. You shut down one and the same thing is right there. It's not like you can close the doors on the office.
And the other point was you can't exactly shut down Google.
Yeah, you can't shut it down. I mean, the industry folks use the analogy of cockroaches generally. you stomp one and there's 500 more growing in the walls. But this was one that evolved with the first Napster case when they discovered, okay, when there was a physical place that we could shut down, it was great, and long ago it evolved well beyond that,
mm-hmm.
and there's no longer we lock the doors and pull the plug on that building, and now they find, okay, we got our suit, we have these guys to go to jail if they don't want their appeal, and it didn't stop a bit of...
Exactly. A long time ago, they tried to seize the Pirate Bay servers, and they just went out and bought new ones. I mean...
Right. a lot of the legal remedies are based on previous technology where you could go and take the stuff. And there's no stuff anymore, of course, to take, which is one of the reasons, again, that you find the entertainment industry so frantic for something to do, because they don't know how to handle it. They obviously are concerned about the piracy because in their mind, although I realize not in the minds of many of the people in this room, they have a right to protect their property, yet they can't stop the folks from stealing it. And it makes them a little bit crazy.
Okay, in the back.
I don't know if you're voting for the question.
Go for it.
I don't have a whole lot of speech to give to y'all.
Yeah, I don't really either, so we'll just have a discussion.
My question was actually based on how long do you think it is before our online personas are going to be held liable versus our real world personas? Like, since there is no actual building for them to go and shut down, how long do you think it'll take for the law to adapt for them shutting down online personas versus real world personas?
I think to some extent we're already there. You can already file a suit against a John Doe or against and identify it by what you know about the John Doe. And so if they say, you know, Deckard is out there, we know Deckard's here, we can attach a judgment to him, and if later we find out the physical person, then that judgment can go ahead and attach the physical person.
Of course, the problem with that too is you have notice issues. You know, under our legal system, you have to have notice so you can show up and defend yourself. So if the best information they've got is a John Doe, they can at least get the process started, but until they can actually contact you in some fashion.
And you also would have a jurisdictional issue. Courts can't... The power of the court cannot be imposed on somebody who's not in the court's area. So a Georgia state court can't go into Mississippi and arrest somebody, by and large. That's why the United States couldn't go and arrest the Pirate Bay there in Sweden.
Right, you're dealing international.
Right, but there are long-arm statutes, and there is jurisdiction based on significant contacts with the court's jurisdiction. So... there's an old case, the Volkswagen case, mm-hmm. where German company, whose subsidiary was manufacturing Volkswagens in Oklahoma, the subsidiary and then the parent, the German parent, were sued, and it was held that the German parent had significant business interests in Oklahoma. Then Oklahoma court could grab them and subject them to jurisdiction. So it's a real possibility, even if you're physically somewhere else, if your online persona is over here, you have significant contacts.
Of course, the problem being as well that if the person is not here, if they're in Sweden, or especially if they're in like China or other countries that don't really have much in the way of IP laws or not enforcement anyway, there's not a lot the U.S. courts can do. Is there something you want to add?
I mean, to an extent, I think from what you were asking, the only protection you currently have is that they don't necessarily know who you are. There's no legal reason that your on-screen persona is somehow protected more than your real persona. Legally, that's not really a distinction. It's just a matter of figuring out who you are. It's like robbing a bank with a mask over your face. You know, it's not that putting the mask over your face is any protection aside from they don't know where to get you from.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, the laws adapted to VCRs. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between a torrent file that I'm just using to time shift Buffy or the whatever that I don't want to watch at 7 o'clock, I want to watch it at a later time? What is the difference between that? If I just grab a torrent or something else as a time shift device, what's the difference?
Time shifting, you're probably okay. The is a Betamax case, the Sony case. Specifically talked about time shifting is how that's a permitted use, and that's really not a problem as far as copyright's concerned. They're really more concerned with copying and distribution than just, you know, I'm watching something else right now, I'll get to Buffy, you know, tomorrow.
And there's some lovely language in the Sony Betamax case by the court proving that any time there's a technology issue, the courts will get it wrong. There's some lovely language in that case where the justice explained, we've talked to lots of people, and obviously no one would ever, like, make libraries of this stuff.
He's retiring now, so we're okay.
It's lovely language. Yeah. You know, any of y'all maybe have a few copies of some movies instead of just, you know, copying them, watching them, and deleting them is what the justices all, of course, believe is what everyone would primarily be doing. that's how the Sony Betamax case was justified, is that no one's really going to be keeping these. They're just time shifting. Instead of watching them on TV now, they'll just watch them on TV later. They're not keeping them.
And I guess that's a case of a very clever lawyer making a good argument that was complete BS garbage, and some judge bought off on
it. And the justice would have.
I'm sure he believed it while he was saying it.
Uh-huh.
Lawyers always believe it while they're saying
it. But my question, though, is that is an actual legal defense. With the Betamax case, what is the difference?
Well,
the courts are concerned between a torrent and using a Betamax.
Oh.
Explain why Betamax are hard for these kids.
it's the technology that it's the technology that lost to VHS. For our purposes, it's identical. Yeah.
Quick question.
So I'm pretty clear that you know, the copyright, you can't take something and copy it as an individual. That would infringe copyrighting. So the area that I'm kind of unclear on how they would approach legally is. And correct me if I'm wrong on what a BitTorrent is and what Napster is. Peer-to-peer networks, essentially you've got just machines that are facilitating one individual over here trading with another individual over here. So can you kind of describe how the legal process of going after that technology? Because to me, they aren't really responsible for the copyright infringement. It's the person downloading.
Anyone who makes a copy is infringing and have violated the law.
So that's what I'm not clear on. If you have a peer-to-peer network, you're just transferring a file over the internet.
There is an 07 case, which is the Grokster case, and the Grokster case looked back at the Betamax case we just talked about, and we're trying to figure out how that all fit together. And it held that the Sony case. I put this together in my head. The Sony case basically held that in the absence of any other evidence of infringement, of intent to infringe copyright, that the mere fact that a Betamax machine could be used to infringe copyright was not enough to prove intent. You have to prove intent in a criminal case. The Grokster case said, all of you lawyers who took the Betamax case to mean that any dual use saved a technology from criminal liability was wrong. If there's other evidence of intent, that's good enough. And they were talking about, in the context of Grokster, there is a central clearinghouse server that connected distributors and people who wanted the file. And this central clearinghouse was potentially proof of intent. Grokster had some other intent evidence, basically fuck copyright letters going everywhere. And an intent to pick up Napster customers. But that's kind of where Pirate Bay and BitTorrents matches up with the Grokster case, because the Pirate Bay was a central clearinghouse connecting potential infringers, then that would be proof of intent. Right. Basically, it's almost, and it can be considered kind of like being a fence for stolen goods. You know, you're not necessarily doing anything illegal per se, but you sure know what's going on.
And if you're making it possible for the others to commit the infringement, you're in with them.
Yeah, and if you set up knowing and intending to make it possible, that would go back to intent.
But even though you could distribute non-copyrighted material over this network, it was the intent that they knew that they were distributing copyrighted material.
Yeah, I think the Grokster case said, yeah, people are going to pick up Shakespeare off Grokster, but 90% of it's going to be copyrighted. Yes. And come
on. The fact that one file was not infringing does not make all of the rest of the infringing files clean.
I think that's kind of being in the electronics forum, that seems to be kind of the line here. We want to be able to use technology to distribute whatever we want, use it as a communication forum, but we have these rules in place that, you know, maybe make it more difficult to do because other people will use our systems illegally.
Well, lawyers don't think the same way you do. We can just stop with that stuff. Especially, I'm not cutting-edge tech chick by any stretch, but the law tends to not focus on the technology per se. In fact, the law tries very hard not to focus on technology because, in general, lawyers do not understand it. It frightens them. Judges. So the law is more apt to approach what have you done and does it violate the law that we're all familiar and comfortable talking about? That's where the clever lawyers come into play, because the few of us who do understand technology go into courtrooms and convince the judges of incredibly stupid things by making it understandable.
And
using very small words and making it non-scary to the old judges who don't get technology.
But the law
tends to focus on the actions of the defendants, because that's what the law is addressing. The law doesn't distinguish between Betamax and BitTorrent. It doesn't care. It's what the people are doing with it that matters. And when you have any sort of new technology, it's still a matter of, well, is there a substantial non-infringing use? Is it just that, as the justices believed in the Sony case, that, well, it's mostly clean, and yet every now and again someone's going to do something wrong with it? Well, Xerox machines are that way. Most uses are fine. Some infringement will happen. We're not going to ban the technology based on small amounts of infringing use. Well, they're not going to ban BitTorrent technology either. They're looking at what's being done with it. And when you look at the Grokster case has something new to it. The Napster line of cases, and frankly, from a legal standpoint, the Pirate Bay case, really aren't interesting from a legal standpoint, because it's kind of a no-brainer. Yeah, it's infringement. The technology is interesting to the people interested in technology. But from a law standpoint, it's infringement.
I just think the problem with that is that they're not really taking the time to define their terms properly. Because when you think about it, contrary to previous styles of peer-to-peer, where you would have a central passing house and they would be actively taking part in the infringement. And while I'm not saying that the Pirate Bay did not support copyright infringement, they certainly hosted torrent files that had copyright stuff on their website.
They named themselves Pirate Bay.
Yeah.
It's a fanciful name. They like
it's
pirates.
It's very difficult for them to stand with a straight face and say, oh no, it's all innocent.
Well, I know.
No one argues it's a suggestive name.
Merely the point is... Merely the point is the torrent files, as they stated in the case, are just little tiny bits of code that can be found absolutely anywhere. And if they were to make those torrent files themselves illegal, they would be making 98% of all the programs in the world illegal.
But that's what we call elevating form over substance, which is, the point is you're taking a copyrighted work from person A, who bought it or didn't buy it, and giving it to person B, who definitely didn't buy it, and that's infringement. Now, how this actually happens is really not that important. It's that B got it and B didn't pay for it.
Yeah.
So the idea is, it's still illegal to rob a bank whether I used a horse or a car.
Exactly.
Right, or used a gun, a knife, or
yeah.
you could kill people with your mind.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Stuff you weren't supposed to have, the court doesn't care how.
Well, and ultimately,
what I'm just saying is, it's with the robbing a bank example, you're going to be arresting the person who's robbing the bank. You're not arresting the knife.
No, but we'll also arrest the guy who encouraged, who helps the bank robber, who is driving the getaway car, who sold him the knife. There are a lot of people who will be involved in that prosecution, aside from the guy holding the knife.
Well, the other thing I see...
the knife itself is immune to jurisdiction.
Well, the other thing I see with your particular analogy as well, if they're just hosting all these programs that can be found anywhere, I can make the same argument that there are, a very set number of characters in the alphabet and on the keyboard. You know, as long as I can say, well, I'm just holding characters, then I can put any book up online I want to and infringe all night long, because it's just a bunch of letters. You know, so it's kind of a disingenuous argument.
Well, the argument is less on the actual files being the bits of code as the actual torrent hash files that they're hosting, because those little tiny, like, 5 kilobyte files aren't the actual file that is being pirated. They're merely saying, hey, this file was hosted on this computer, this is where you can go get it, to the BitTorrent client that the person is using to download it.
And I think we come back to the fence analogy of...
they're making it possible, they're involved in the crime.
Yeah. That gentleman in the back has had his hand up for a while, very diligently.
And a question, how liable are people and sites for just providing links to sites? And how do other sites such as search engines get away with being able to publish them?
Well, there's a big difference between hosting and indexing. And that's been one of the
issues.
I'm
not saying hosting. You don't have any material on your site. You just have links or, location sites, or if not to the direct file. How is it that people and how involved are they or sites in this kind of activity? And how can major companies like Bing and Google and all that have this exact same links, but yet they're hands off?
One thing maybe to look at is the context. You know, if Google is just, it's Google. You know, you type in a word, you get a gillion responses. Whereas if it's the Pirate Cove, which points only to sites that infringe, that would be one evidence of.
If your site and what you have is not just, say you set up a site and it has all kinds of material, say, hey, we've got a convention link here and all kinds of DragonCon people on it, and they talk about other stuff. What degree, where does the ball drop that says you're now liable?
That's where the lawyers come in.
That's the difference between the letter and the spirit of law, and that's why it goes before a judge,
right.
Correct?
Yeah. Google can afford the expensive lawyers, and you'll stop when you get the cease and desist letter.
No, we'll stop with the EFF.
The other thing good grief, I had a point, it went away. Never mind. Next question.
What about stuff like if I have a DVD, but the DVD is broken and I go online and download the movie? Would I be doing anything illegal? I own the movie.
Well, that was my point. That's right.
That's a tough one, just because technically when you buy a movie, you're not buying the movie. You're buying a license to play and use the movie. So if you're downloading another one, I mean, technically you're making a copy and technically you are infringing. But
if you have a license to play and use it, all you're doing is continuing to play and use it.
Your license was attached to the physical media.
Right, and that's the problem.
But it's the age of virtual media. Physical media is dead. I don't keep libraries of DVDs. I rip them to my hard drive and I play them off my hard drive.
Well, that may be so, but the problem is the people in Congress are not in your age group. The problem is, you know, we're still living in last century's Congress, and it's going to take them a while to catch up. It always takes the law a long time to catch up with stuff like this, if for no other reason that, especially from the court aspect of it, we got to go through and litigate all this stuff and try to hash it out with people fighting just to see where the courts are going to draw the line on this stuff, and then you throw in Congress in the mix.
Just to defend my people a little bit, I come in from more of an academic side. I'm not a litigator, so I don't do the court stuff at all. But it's actually good that lawyers are fairly slow. It doesn't, the lawmaking process is slow. I don't know if any of y'all followed several years back UCITA, Uniform Commercial Information Transactions Act. It was fun. Yay. It was basically Microsoft and a few of their hired hounds trying to usurp the Uniform Commercial Code by using a lot of really impressive technology words that even the guys writing the law did not understand. And they tried basically to take away any consumer protection that existed on any transaction, I mean consumer transaction, that involved a computer or an exchange of a machine that exchanged information. So it was basically posters. Anything that there was input and output to. And these guys who were writing the law were, good Lord, less technically adept than I was. And they were, moments before putting the legislation out in front of the large academic group that's going to approve it, arguing in the back room as to whether a digital camera would be included in this or not. And it was just astoundingly badly done, but that was an example of the law racing forward ahead of anyone's understanding of where it should go. You almost had a really, really, really bad consumer law just because the lawyers were not technologically adept. They don't have your technology, and their law was going to suck. Fortunately, a couple of
companies.
Than
any other law they have.
The law adapts slowly, and it's in your interest for the law to adapt slowly. When it races forward, it gets it wrong.
As a funny story about that, it's slightly off topic, but they recently passed a law in Missouri that you cannot have polypropylene containers on the Missouri River. I mean, you can't have Tupperware. They meant polystyrene, and they broke the law. Tupperware is illegal in Missouri.
Yeah, there are a number of, I mean, there's tons of laws. In Georgia, for a while, this is completely non-technological. For a long time in Georgia golf courses, the law was that when they used certain chemicals on the golf courses, they had to put warning signs. And they said, oh, we have to put the warning signs on the first and the ninth hole so everyone will see it. Which doesn't exactly work if you want people to get it on the front and the back nine. But when you do the math, you realize people don't see the warnings. But the law that does things wrong, so they're not going to catch up with the tech. And expecting them to be the law to be cutting edge is foolish, because it's not going to get there until it's no longer cutting edge.
Building on that, I had a question. As far as statutory damages go, they sort of strike me as more of a last century thing, you know, as more of a this company may have infringed this much, but we're not sure, so we might award you, you know, a couple $100,000 per infringement. Where do y'all see that going with respect to individuals? I know it's popular now, but do you think that will change at all for individuals? I mean, or will it remain on the low side at $750? Or I'm just, yeah.
Well, I think part of the issue there is individuals can't afford to pay lobbyists. And until you can start lobbying Congress, usually not a lot's going to change. So I don't really see that going anywhere. Now, if businesses start pushing, maybe.
I think that you have to go statutory damages. I don't think you want to hand a jury one way or the other, or you can hand a jury.
It's hard to prove, like, how many times it's paying somebody.
Right.
And so, can't go from that.
And I think with music, there already is a statutory royalty scheme in place for radio and so forth. So I think that that's just going to be where it is, because it practically is the only really way that works. Whether that value goes up or down, that's more of an open question.
If I understand your previous discussion, if you copy a DVD and put it on your computer in digital form, that's illegal, pretty much, correct?
Actually, Grokster case says it's not illegal.
It's not illegal,
personal use.
Then? So if I take all my music and all my movies and copy them to my computer, that's illegal?
No, as long as it's for personal use.
How does iTunes get away with it then?
iTunes pays money, don't they?
No. If I have all my stuff, stuff I've downloaded, like the download-only software, not just stuff that are on DVDs or like on discs and all that, but now there's all these things that you can only purchase and it's digital only. You do not have a physical representation. And then you import it into your iTunes, which drops it down to your iPod.
They signed with the record company. That's the reason why they couldn't put Beatles on iTunes Store for so long, because they couldn't get the record deal signed.
But iTunes sucks in everything off your computer.
The code's a separate issue. To address your question, no, because it conceptually is the same as transferring from a DVD to your computer. You're transferring from one physical storage medium to another physical storage item, I guess, not medium. So really, you're not altering the ownership of the copyrighted material.
Have a physical copy, a digital copy, and an iPod copy, they're all legal copies now.
There probably are all legal copies under Grokster.
Well, and the other issue with that, too, is especially since you're getting it off iTunes, most likely iTunes has a very long and, you know, verbose contract with whatever record company they got it from that allows you to do all these things with it just as a matter of contract. So that way you're kind of getting around the copyright issue through them.
You're downloading it with permission from. If you're paying money from iTunes, you're downloading with permission. Your use is restricted by both the technological things they've adapted. And
from iTunes,
somewhere you click.
That's downloading from iTunes. But part of what iTunes does is transfer your whole digital library from your PC, regardless of whether you got it through iTunes or not,
right,
onto your iPod.
Mac is hungry.
iPod is obviously for personal use. You can fiddle with it. I know.
There's a difference between an illegal copy and a legal copy, and the copies that are being made by the iTunes machine have been cleared through their legal department sufficiently that those are licensed and allowed copies. You're allowed to make a backup copy you're allowed to make a copy for personal use. If you buy a record, which, go look it up, you'll find out what they are. you're allowed to make a tape of it. And that's not an illegal copy. There are sections of the law that allow for personal use and for backup copies. That's not the same as then posting it so everyone else can have it.
So making a copy of something that you have purchased, it falls under fair use, correct? If you
yeah,
fair use is kind of ugly, so it's hard. We don't want to.
If I have a DVD, right, with small children prone to break them, make a backup copy of the DVD onto my hard drive as a backup because I've purchased it, then I don't run into any issues legally with having a copy of it. Correct?
You are. The lawyery term, you're probably okay doing that.
Yeah.
The issue is, let me back up. We're litigators. We are mercenaries. She's an academic. She thinks for a living.
A
yeah. She thinks we just go out there and start beating up the other side, regardless of which position we believe in. So as a litigator, I'm saying, if you're my client, you're fine. I can probably win that. If I'm the record company, I'm thinking, that's a crappy case. I don't want to take it. But it might be illegal. It's just not worth the effort of litigating.
there's an exception in the Copyright Act that is the section number is escaping me right now that allows for an individual to make a copy of something of a piece of music that they have bought. It's not bought anymore. It used to be bought. And I forget the code section, do y'all?
No, I don't remember offhand.
It's 107, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
exactly.
But there's a distinct section that says if you buy a DVD, you can burn a copy, or you can burn it, you can put it on your DVD player. You can make a copy for yourself. You can, and it came in long before DVDs. It literally was so you can buy the album and make a tape to play in your car, and that was what was behind that section. So it's okay to record your LP and play the cassette in your car. Same thing, you can make a backup copy. Usually, sometimes licenses don't allow you to do that now. When you started clicking I agree, you often give away some of your rights.
Because a license is just a specialized contract, and in contract you can do all sorts of wacky things that you were dumb enough to agree to, basically.
When you clicked I agree, in addition to agreeing to become Bill Gates' towel boy, should he call you, you may have given up your right to make that personal use backup copy. It depends, which is the activity.
And that's why all three of us went,
it's not fair use, that's
right.
Different too.
And that's another issue, is fair use is a very specific term of art, and it's kind of, it more falls into the area of if you're making parodies of things or if you're using something for educational purposes, so it's kind of a different law set.
There's a statute that applies to your question, and
right.
It's not fair use.
I think he has the mic.
Earlier you mentioned there's a difference between hosting and indexing.
Right.
Well, what do you say about like where Google caches every website it indexes? So in essence, they host a version of the copyrighted material and distribute it. Now, isn't that the same thing that Pirate Bay is doing, only they're indexing and hosting a cached version?
Probably not, because...
A better example of that would be Bing, where you can do media search, and during your search, you can see the videos through Bing and watch it off of their servers and not from the source.
I think this will answer both of them, is that Google caches, whatever, copies of copyrighted material for purposes of its search engine working, of allowing users to actually locate the file. Pirate Bay caches or holds or hosts copies of the file for purposes of distribution. Distribution is illegal, letting people come find your stuff, not necessarily.
And
so that's the difference. Again, it comes down to intent.
Well, I guess what it comes down to as well is when these issues have been litigated in the past, it was pitched to the court as Google's acting, as indexing is acting like a phone book. So they said, oh, phone book's fine because there's no copyright material. So that's...
Lawyers make arguments that win.
Right.
You love an
out. Right.
But, like, in the same sense, Pirate Bay, again, you're going down to definitions of terms.
That's cool.
Pirate Bay is... you upload a file to Pirate Bay, you're posting it. Pirate Bay is merely indexing your file and distributing the indexed copy to anyone, which in theory is the same thing that Google is doing with its cache. By having those files, it's merely allowing a search engine to work. When you go onto Pirate Bay, the first thing you see is a search box for what you're searching.
But in theory, and that this is what this is not. Yes, technically, they're not doing anything wrong. If you look at it in a very narrow slice of what they're doing, if you look at the entirety of their actions, they set up the Pirate Bay to distribute pirated software and pirated files, and the fact they're using an otherwise legal system to make it work doesn't suddenly make an illegal intent a legal action.
Yeah, I can't run over you with my car, even though I'm allowed to drive it. It's not the technology that's wrong. And the analogy between Pirate Bay and Google, never mind, there are 18 very boring legal technicalities as to why those two cases would be different, but sometimes even in law you can back up and be just, you know, take the big picture and you look at Google. Obviously there is some infringing stuff up on, you know, if you follow links on Google, you will sometimes find illegal stuff out there. But everything else. Pirate Bay, you didn't find anything else. If you were going to bring a case, and I'll, you know, leave that to the litigators, you can't shut down Google. And again, the phone book is a really funny analogy if you've read all 18 of the phone book cases. But lawyer humor is different, too.
Yeah.
We don't think like you do, and our jokes just don't make sense to anyone else. But obviously there is some infringing on Google, but one of the other lines of the cases talks about substantial non-infringing use. Obviously Google has substantial non-infringing use, just like Xerox machines are used predominantly for legal purposes. you're allowed to have Xerox machines. You're not allowed to infringe copyrights on Xerox machines. You're allowed to have search engines. You're allowed to have links. You're allowed to host all kinds of stuff. You're still not allowed to steal other people's copyright material, no matter what technology you use to use it.
And if you tell Google and you say, hey, that's copyrighted material, they will remove
it. They'll take it down.
They'll take it down, and that's a huge difference. Pirate Bay would say,
thank you, we knew that. We'll put an asterisk next to it now so everyone can find it faster.
And the other issue is, when you name yourself Pirate Bay, you can throw that substantial non-infringing use argument out the window.
Yeah.
So you're done.
When your mission statement says, ha, 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 and obscenity towards Hollywood, you know, your innocent use is just shot.
One question on the contract stuff.
Now, you're next, we promise.
Yeah. Clicking away your right to make backup copies, would that not be a contract contrary to public policy if the copyright law specifically said?
No. Contrary to public policy is, it's got to be like contracting to become a prostitute. It's got to be something that's public policy.
Conscience.
Yeah, not just...
It shocks the conscience, yeah. Not just seems wrong.
But I've seen arguments made for contracts against public policy in Virginia where a private organization that rented a convention center from the state government was unable to prohibit firearms on the property because the government is prohibited in Virginia from prohibiting firearms on public property other than courthouses.
The Second Amendment right is actually much stronger than your right to pirate software.
and protecting one of the Bill of Rights, whether you agree with it personally or not, would be counting as substantial public policy.
And public policy and contracts of adhesion are different.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to ask you for a little speculation. So a while ago, Napster gets shut down. LimeWire is still out there. Now the Pirate Bay looks like it's being sold or shut down, whatever, but there's always some new technology on the horizon.
Someone else will pick it up.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
It's not going to go away.
You can't stop the signal.
What was the question, though?
There wasn't one. I was just asking you, like, what do you think will happen in the future when and if the Pirate Bay closes?
My initial thought, I'm going to hijack this part, I'm sorry. My initial thoughts on this, we're thinking about how copyright is at a crisis moment, because it initially came up with the invention of the printing press where you could actually copy. And for, you know, almost 1,000, no, and whatever, up until about the 50s, say, you really needed a significant capital investment to become an infringer. You had to own a printing press, own a record presser, own something that was a machine, a big one. Now all of a sudden we've got boom boxes, then we've got computers, we've got digital files, and so we've taken what used to be basically a few people with money and with investment to everybody. And so we've gone from a couple hundred people in the country owning a Model T to everybody has a car. The landscape is totally different, and we're in the middle of that shift right now while the culture changes and then the law changes to accommodate the culture.
Another an analogy to that, which was a copyright evolution thing, since it's old and historic, the academic followed this part, has nothing to do with current law. But there was a similar outcry from the entertainment industry when piano rolls came out and when the radio started being used, because prior to that, you had to go to hear the performers. You had to go and listen to the professionals, or you played it at home. But once you started being able to hear it on the radio, then suddenly anyone could hear the professionals without having to pay to listen to them. And they were running around then as if it were the end of the world, because the way that artists got compensated and the way that the industry was structured had to change, because everyone could now listen to the radio at home. And the law adapted and changed it, but it's very similar now. You hear the content industry screaming and yelling, saying that we can't ever make a living, everything's going to hell, we're all going to die. And it's the same thing they said when radio came out. Well, they adapted, and there are some very strange rules as a result of the advent of radio. And we're going to get some strange rules now, but right now we're still in the stage where the content industry is running around screaming, saying we're all going to die. And people want to purchase entertainment, and there will still be an industry somehow, we just don't know how yet.
I hate to, if I wanted to make a backup of a DVD, and I kind of hate to go back over this, but if I have to break DRM to do it, and all DVDs come with DRM now, is that legal?
That's different, because then we've got, one, you Oh, good grief, I don't want to go to this.
Digital Millennium Copyright Act,
yeah.
Circumventing anti...
So it's illegal to make a copy of your DVD.
No, it's illegal to break through the protections on it.
Okay, so if you want to make a digital copy of your DVD, and the only way to do that is
the fact that there's DRM on basically every DVD in existence does not matter at all to us saying it's not illegal to make a copy of your DVD. Because those are different. Those are different.
No, I understand that absolutely. But from a practical viewpoint, from us,
what?
If we want to be completely in the, if somebody wanted to be completely in the clear, they would not make a copy of their DVD if they had to break the DRM. Is it
correct?
Yeah.
Even if making that copy would be legal, and again, that depends on what you agreed to when you clicked, but assuming that you have that same old-fashioned right to make a cassette tape of your album, assuming that applies currently to you, if you have to break through any DRM, breaking through the DRM is illegal, even if what you did after you got there was legal. Breaking into my house at night is illegal, whether you steal something or not. And I have got
back there.
So we've been talking about this in terms of U.S. law, and I understand a lot of copyright and IP stuff does have some treaty factors in it, but doesn't, like, I would imagine form shopping could defeat a lot of the rulings and the logic behind what we're saying. As long as, unless we could seize their persons or property, I don't see how we could enforce any of this if they decide to go to who the hell knows where and set it up.
Well, why on earth did Sweden go after somebody who really the Motion Picture Association of America was mad at? They got paid to. They got leaned on by the U.S. Trade Representative. Walt Disney's ghost started haunting somebody.
Hey, the mouth is lawyers.
Well, yeah, they're you think they're nice, but they're the other issue of that is there are treaties that do. There's some effort, and we'll talk about this tomorrow, to kind of universalize copyright, because there is a real problem, if you believe copyright's legitimate, of form shopping and of the ability to jump to another form, and then the rules are different. Look at that gentleman.
Question for you.
Which us?
In a more functional sense. Oh,
okay.
My thought is you've got people here who are breaking copyright law, possibly. We have films.
None of
us have
ever broken copyright.
None of us have.
I did it, but I deleted them all.
I guess my question is, what's the purpose? You shut down one, another site pops up, or another hosting service pops up. It's not really necessarily money that's driving it, because most of the time they're not getting money in return for what they're doing. Maybe they are, I don't know. But in a situation like this conference, or maybe other conferences going on here in Atlanta, you're showing films, you're playing music in a general session. You may even have a general session that has a theme, Star Wars, and you're playing the music. You've got copyright violation going on all over the place that's blatant. But we don't see lawyers and everyone coming after these offenders.
It happens.
Well, and it seems that there's the file sharing community has been targeted on a large scale,
let me stop there before we go any further. When you talk about music being played here, for instance, even films, there are licenses that you purchase.
You can get ASCAP, you can go... But
Dragon Con and this hotel, whoever has it, someone has the ASCAP license, because cons like this, smaller, and Dragon has some problems with you, do get shut down.
This con probably does have the license, but I work in the industry here, and I've worked in these facilities, and I know they don't get the licenses, and I've talked to ASCAP about it. But the same thing with taking it to an iPod, and then you can bring it in and play it to a large crowd that you've charged an admittance fee to. But these things go on. You can walk down the streets of New York City and buy illegal CDs of mixed music, but no one shuts them down. Why does it seem to be such a target on file sharing via peer-to-peers, via the internet, when there's all kinds of other things going on that never seem to even be focused on?
My pet theory on this, and I could be wrong, shoot me down if I am, is, y'all, please, is that the one of the problems with copyright is if you don't enforce your copyright, then you are in danger of losing it. And I think that the problem with guys in the streetcar in New York City, because I went to law school in New York, so...
I'm sorry.
was that, to some extent, they're hard to pin down. You can't, you know, they know to run when they have to. Similarly, some guy charging admission on playing with an iPod, if they get found out, they do get a visit from the lawyers, probably. But how do you deal with peer-to-peer networking? If I can see a situation where if, and this is the litigator talking, if a you know EMI or you know, doesn't try, at least try to shut down peer-to-peer networking, they lose all their copyrights because they knew it was out there, they knew it was infringing, and they didn't do anything. That's their worst nightmare. They've got to deal with it.
Well, I think that there's one thing that you started with I think is not quite accurate when you say that they're not going after Dragon Con or infringers here. They do. And it's not making the news as much because it's been going on. It's old news. And they do try to enforce it. The enforcement actions are out there. They enforce it because they can. Of course, tons of infringement happens and doesn't get stopped. But the industry understands people playing movies in a room for someone else. I mean, they have enforcement actions on that, and it happens more than you might think. The ASCAP guys are fairly active, and they do go literally into restaurants and will hear music playing on a radio, and they will walk up to the manager and ask to see the license, and if they don't have it, the lawyers come. That happens more than you might think, but the digital stuff right now you're hearing more about because it's new cool news, and also, just like you were saying, they're scared because they're seeing the whole world change in front of them, and they see everything they make money on going away. And so they're panicking, and they are attacking anything they can in an attempt to, you know, stem the tide with that little teaspoon that they have, which is the litigation action. And they're doing what they can. Had they been smart, they would have adopted they would have done iTunes first. iTunes proves that, yeah, actually, you can take MP3s and still make money off of it. But they didn't do that first. Okay. They stomped around and screamed first because the world was changing.
It looks like is we're sour grapes, so we'll try and go after...
They're trying to figure out what to do.
I've been waiting to tell this story, so I'm going to do it, and y'all can deal with it. My wife and I, we lived in New York City. We go out to the Village Halloween Parade on Halloween. People are wearing costumes. We go out there, we're walking back, and we see two guys walking down the street in white bedsheet robes, white pointed hats, faces covered. And, you know, we're from the South. We're going, what the f- are they people? You know, this is, they're going to get killed. We get 10 feet past them and both look at each other and go, ghosts.
Oh.
They're from the North. They don't think about it. And so this is what happened, is that, they said, okay, copyright infringement, we have a hammer for this nail, let's use that hammer. They never sat there and said, oh, wait, this is a paradigm-shifting moment, we need to jump onto this. It just never occurred to them, because they're in a different culture.
Well, another thing you have to remember as well is that there's a significant money issue in this. Because I think the last stats I saw to run a copyright case from start to finish, it was a major one, you're looking at probably a price tag of about $350,000. Now, that's not the case with an individual infringer, but still, this can get really expensive really fast. Lawyers don't work cheap. So they have to be selective on who they go after. You go after a guy on a street corner, he probably doesn't have any money, so you're not going to get anything back. So there's only so much you can do with that before you run out of money.
And going at the mixed movie we saw, going after 20 people, one of them fights back, they probably made money overall. The settlements on the other 19 probably paid the legal fees on number 20. So it actually was break even for them.
And they also are doing it to try to scare everyone else. They're trying to make examples. Mm-hmm. But when they're going after, they pick an individual college student. They lose money on that case, but their goal is to say, see, we do enforce this. So that what you're thinking of, oh, well, they play movies like that all the time. No one ever enforces it. They're trying to make a point of saying, look, we are too enforcing it.
Yeah, one of the reasons that Jamie, is her name right, Jamie?
Yeah.
Was the lady who was picked to fight this out of those 20 people. She was the most photogenic, the best sob story, basically. The recording industry, by and large, will sue scruffy little college students, no offense, who who are sharing a million files, and you know everybody's picking their ideal case where they can, and hoping that if that's the one that goes up to a higher court, the Supreme Court eventually, they have a good fact situation The rule for litigators is if you need the facts on your side, you don't have the facts, then you argue the law. If you don't argue the law, then you tell the sob story. So they try to line those dominoes up as best they can.
Two questions. One, have both on how laws have affected culture. What effects do you see? What fallout do you see from the extension of copyright, which was initially, 14 years, to now it's practically never-ending, and stuff just isn't falling into public domain. And so if anyone wants to, it's getting to the point where there's, to use something that people would recognize, you have to go to, you're forced into breaking the law. And the other, what fallout has the RIAA seen from these lawsuits of everyday Americans? What have they seen have they seen any fallout from consumers deciding,
well,
making decisions?
Kind of taking those questions in reverse order, as far as RIAA, one thing you have to remember about RIAA is RIAA doesn't sell albums. RIAA represents record companies, and they're kind of set up so they can be the bad guy. They can stand up and say, see, I'm doing it, and the record companies can still make money. So that kind of buffers the record companies some from the fallout.
To the extent it works.
Right, to the extent it works.
The artist who still wants you to buy their stuff, but the other guys.
Have the record companies themselves seen any of the fallout? Because I know, I personally look at it, in my opinion, it's not just RIAA, it's everyone who's a member of RIAA.
Which is everyone.
Right.
Pretty
much.
Which is why, if I have to pay for music, I don't get it.
Well, and I think you kind of answered your own question on that, because, yeah, there's been a lot of angst, and I think a lot of the feelings in this room show there's been a lot of angst. A lot of people don't like the record companies right now. And they realize that they put out a press release at the end of 08 saying they were going to stop suing individual file sharers because they've gotten so much flack off of it. Now, I've heard anecdotal evidence that they're still running a couple more suits. They still added a few, but they're supposed to be quitting that. So they're going to try something new. At least they say they are, because what they're doing is not really working.
I think to answer your kind of the first half of your question, which was, have we hit the turning point on extension of copyright because Walt Disney wants to keep Mickey Mouse? I think we've hit that wall. And the reason I'm saying that is because I've heard normal people, not just lawyers, talking about how it's Disney. And I think that makes something in the American psyche go a little wacko. I don't know, I don't have a crystal ball, but that's my feeling on that, is that we're there, that the next time it comes up, which is, I guess, in what, 15 years?
Something like that.
When Mickey Mouse comes out again, then, yeah, so.
Trademark is completely separate.
Yeah, completely different law set.
There's some crossover, but not a whole lot, so it wouldn't affect it.
Trademarks never expired. As long as you use your trademark, it exists. Copyrights do eventually expire.
Yes, sir.
I'll wait till
so much, but that's the DRM issue. Particularly, I'm going to use iTunes as an example, even though they no longer have their DRM on. But one of the limitations of iTunes DRM that was the big argument was you couldn't use your music on your own thing. You couldn't take your mixtape and you couldn't rip your LP to a record and play it, or a cassette and play it in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Because, hey, you can stream your music from your computer over your Xbox so you can play it while you're gaming, but you can't do that with the DRM music. The Xbox doesn't read it. You can only read it on iTunes.
Right.
So, with the amount of flack that they got from people for that, they now no longer sell their music on DRM. But a lot of sites still do sell their music with DRM. What does that mean as far as not so much your copying it, but using it how you want to use it?
I think to an extent you actually just made the argument that the music industry is working towards, which is, okay, we tried doing it this way, and iTunes got so much crap about having DRM, and they've changed what they're doing. They're going to see how that works, and they make money doing that. If that works for them, then I think you'll see other MP3s or people giving different rights. The industry's trying to figure out what works, and it's how the market works. We'll try selling you this. You want to buy it?
Well, what you have to...
Okay, well, now let's try selling you this. So, that's to and from how the market's supposed to work.
Right, what you have to remember about that too is, at the end of the day, these guys are not out to be a thorn in your side. They don't want to annoy you, even though that kind of happens. They just want your money. any way they can figure out how to get you to pay them, they're going to be good with it. They're just trying to work that out.
And they don't know how yet, but it's the process.
If you could go out 10 years, I think it's a really hard question. If you could go out 10 years in the 50s, what do you think digital rights matters is going to look like? I'm your lawyer, so you're seeing what's going on now. Where, in other words, I'm asking, where do you think this is ultimately leading? Do you have any idea where it's ultimately leading?
I think DRM is going to be more pervasive, but less intrusive. I think that, you know, part of the discussion we've had is that the technology has decentralized infringement to the point where it's like speeding, everybody does it, and there's really no social stigma to it. So I think that the only effective way to combat that is with DRM, but you get so much crap for it, it's going to be a lot less intrusive than Spoor, for example, that came out and there was just this ridiculous amount of grief because it was such a bad implementation.
But you also have, when you talk about where is DRM going to go, I think that you're always going to have the same issue that the industry knew from the beginning, which is why they put in this, or they got Congress to enact parts of the Digital and Copyright Act, which said you're not allowed to break through the DRM, because they know darn good and well that the best hackers don't work for the record industry. So they're of the people who, so they can build the best walls that they can, but y'all can break through, and they know that. And that's why it's always going to be a constant chasing of, well, we're going to make this a little better, and then y'all break through. And they'll make this a little better, and y'all break through. And it's just a little better, and y'all break through it. That's one of the reasons the Digital Millennium Copyright Act has the segment saying, haha, just breaking through that is illegal.
John Scalzi talks about, I think he uses Rhapsody, and you know, he understands that he pays however much per year, and if he ends that service, he loses his whole library of music that's on, I think it's Rhapsody. I think that's going to be part of it too, is you're going to get cheap enough to put up with the fact that you may lose your entire library of music, but it will come attached to DRM, because that's the only way that the copyright holders feel they can protect themselves.
One point, just to like clarify, since you used the Pirate Bay as several examples and stipulated that because of their name, Pirate Bay, that kind of set them up for what their intent and purpose was.
Mm-hmm.
The Pirate Bay is also a valid political party in Europe and has a seat on Parliament. So they're not just by name that stereotypical association that you're applying to them.
Except that the parliamentary seat that they held is held by the Pirate Party, whose stated goal is to steal stuff and to end copyright.
So by your argument, they should arrest them and throw them in jail then.
Because saying we think copyright law is wrong and we're going to work to change it is not illegal. Stealing stuff is.
It's like the Green Party here. Okay, well, then the Green Party want to legalize weed. Doesn't mean that they're...
You're allowed to want to. You're just still not allowed to have it.
Yeah.
And now a question. What are the limits of liability if your servers are in a foreign country?
That's an extremely... That's an extremely complicated question, though it doesn't sound like it, because... There are multilateral agreements, there are bilateral agreements, there are plurilateral agreements.
Cloud computing. I can have a server set up in 8 different countries to create one instance of a server that people can access.
Well, let me give you kind of the lawyer answer I would give if a client asked me something like that. I would basically say, okay, your maximum damage is tell me how many countries you're in. Tell me what the limits of liability in each country are. Add them all together. That's your maximum exposure. And then, you know, then throw that in the mix and say, okay, is the amount of this exposure worth what you're doing? And because you could get sued in each one of those venues, probably not, but it's very possible. So, you know, actually, the more you cloud compute, the worse your potential loss can be.
I think the best precedent for this one is actually Howard Hughes, who, to avoid, I do this to everybody, I know, to avoid tax law. You'd live in some place 6 months to become a citizen, therefore taxed. He would stay in a hotel in Nevada for 5 months, 29 days. Then he would move to a hotel in California, 5 months, 29 days. He moved to a hotel in Bermuda, 5 months, 29 days. He painted a big fat bullseye on himself, and everybody started changing their laws to deal with Howard Hughes. He died before it actually kind of caught up with him, which is not really a good strategy, by the way. but
or having to catch up with you.
Yeah.
Dying to get away from it's not a good strategy.
Yeah. And how he died is also bad. Mm-hmm. But the point is that if you're just kind of this guy out there making a program, no one cares. it's not worth the effort. If you are making yourself a serious thorn, like the Pirate Bay was setting out to do, you put a big fat bullseye on yourself, and
but
you're going to get
take
nailed.
An application like Blinks.tv located out of Tavala, an island nation, you can copy every video program that's ever been made in every country and distribute it and offer it to everyone in the world.
I hope you don't like going to the United States or Japan mm-hmm. or Europe, because they'll
cross the borders and they will nab you.
Yes. Yeah, they'll say, okay, we can't stop you, but we know you committed a crime. We can prove it. Don't step foot where we can get you, because they will.
They've been known to pull people off of planes that stop for a layover in the U.S.
Actually, you can be served flying over the United States. Never touch the ground. Yeah.
I didn't know about that one.
Some guy got served midair over Arkansas.
Nice.
I know, it's great.
Wow.
The process, I would tell a story, it's a great story. In Arkansas State Court, the process server gets on the plane with the guy flying from, I think, Atlanta to Houston. Looks down until the Mississippi River goes under him. That means he's in Arkansas. They went over the Mississippi, walks up to him, serves him. He's in Arkansas airspace, Arkansas court. He got caught.
Oh, that's sneaky. I like it.
It's great.
I got to remember that one.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So
we're impressed. I hadn't heard that. Yeah. I'm impressed.
So the point being, if you make yourself enough of a problem, the creative people start looking at it, and the creative people will play with the rules, which are designed to let
but,
stuff
but
happen.
But if you're like here in the United States, but yet your server's in a foreign country doing what, and it's legal over mm-hmm. there, are you liable?
Let's say you're in the United States, and you have a big long string to a gun in Mexico, and your worst enemy is
no,
in the United States.
No, no, that's all virtual.
I know, but your United States is your enemy is the United States. You pull that string, pulls the trigger, shoots the guy. Is it not murder just because an instrumentality of the crime you intended, you took action for in the jurisdiction, and happened in the jurisdiction with somewhere else?
No, because the string theory is flawed, because I put the gun over there, I never pulled the string.
You
set it up. Okay.
It doesn't require the physical act or the physical string. If you cause a crime to occur in the United States, you are guilty of committing a crime in the United States, whether part of it was somewhere else.
For example, you set up a source server that anyone in the world can use, and you never use it. You're liable.
Well, and I guess because you set up a source server.
Yeah.
Well, and the other issue you have to remember
can use it.
Is that that's a creative argument.
But you never used it.
But the problem is, if you get nabbed by the government and they put you up in front of a jury, you have to make this creative argument to a jury pool that is non-technical and doesn't really care. So you put this in front of them, they're going to say, sounds like a load of crap, guilty.
And a lawyer's going to make some analogy to a gun and a string in Mexico, and they're going to say, oh, I get that. Yeah, that would be murder. And you're going to jail.
Unfortunately, one of the problems with the jury is you're going to get somebody like me who has kids, and we see through that crap instantly and go, yeah, but you did it.
So basically what you're saying is these big corporate companies can get away with it because they have lawyers and they can manipulate the jury, but all of us out here were screwed.
No, because people have lawyers that they listen to, and so when they're going to buy them.
TV out there using the same analogy that I just used can get away with it for all of these, what, I think the last 5 to 10 years now? And when Google can get away with it in their search engine, your analogy that they're just a search engine is bullcrap, because Google has some of the smartest people out there, because they come up with these algorithms to come up with these instantaneous cache memory searches that they can't do it, but yet the court can give them the same argument for YouTube where they say we can't do it, but yet the court knuckles down on them, and suddenly they're now enforcing copyright on YouTube, something that they said they couldn't previously do, then your argument is invalid because your correlations don't match up. YouTube and Google are the same thing. So a search engine giving you content material that
back up.
You've lost all of us.
Regulated is not different than YouTube and what they're doing now.
The same as Google, which was just a search engine that wasn't regulated, that just delivered video content. And
but,
when the court came down,
okay. I think there we are. The problem is that YouTube is designed around presenting video, right? That's YouTube.
And not to mention fair use video at that.
Right, and it has non-infringing uses,
but
home video. It has
everything in there where they see music that matches a search pattern with a digital signature that matches music. They've been stripping them all out.
Right,
your earlier argument was that they couldn't do that with a search engine.
They claimed they were technologically incapable of doing some stuff. Turns
they
out,
said
oh,
that
well,
with
now
YouTube
we can.
Too, but they're doing
so
it.
They were making an argument that perhaps wasn't exactly true, and they were given pressure by the law, and they discovered, oh, actually, we can comply. Please don't shut us down.
So based upon those arguments and what they can and couldn't do, the only mitigating factor I see is the size of the person, their lawyers.
Not at all. Both Google and YouTube, have cooperated in large part with copyright actions. They've cooperated with the content industry. They've said, okay, show us something. We can't self-police necessarily, but show us something illegal, we'll take it down. Pirate Bay did not.
YouTube, they go proactively and go after it without someone having to show them.
Good. That's what they're supposed to do.
They get to book the same search engine.
Okay, but if YouTube has made a corporate policy that they're not going to run this risk, while Google has a corporate policy that, yeah, business-wise, it's worth it.
No, they did run the risk because initially that's what they started with YouTube, and they ran the risk, ran it around to a judge, forced them to enforce it.
Right, so they had an action against them, and they started complying with the law. It wasn't their big lawyers that kept them from complying with the law, because they're now complying with the law.
They protected them for several years with YouTube.
This may be a lawyer normal person problem too. It may, because honestly, our brains now work different. So that may be part of the problem.
Earlier, you guys are lawyers. Yeah. So it's all how you present it to the jury, which means whoever has the fastest, slickest, quickest lawyer.
No. That's bad.
No. Even the non-litigator pick is going to disagree with that.
Okay. We've already said that the jury's stupid.
Okay, hang on. You're getting past our answer, and you're assuming what we're saying.
Ever heard of something called voir dire?
Or voir dire, can you say it?
Yeah,
but we all made that joke. Okay, here's the problem. Let's say that I have a clearly infringing work. Okay, I'm obviously guilty of copyright infringement. I have the slickest, best lawyers in the world. I have Johnny Cochran before he died. Yeah,
he's probably better now.
Yeah. Johnny Cochran and God, and
with the Chewbacca the Wookiee defense,
exactly. and I walk in and I won't even get to a jury because I'll lose on summary judgment, which is the moving party says, Your Honor, these facts are not in dispute, and everybody has to agree the facts aren't in dispute. With these facts that aren't in dispute, legally, this person loses, and the judge looks at that and goes,
yep,
you're right, and it's gone. So you only go to trial when you are stupid litigious. I mean, you want a trial, and that's the worst place to be. Or you're actually kind of on the margin somewhere. There's either no clear law on it, or there is actually an honestly goodness question of fact. So I don't know the YouTube case. I don't think any of us know the facts of it or know the legal posture. So I don't know what YouTube did, but I do know that if they were clearly in the wrong legally, nothing in the world would protect them, not even a slick lawyer.
Analogy here, outside of technology, you know, for good lawyers that a big corporation or rich people can use against what the rest of us can use, you're saying if O.J. had dumb lawyers that he still would not have been convicted?
If O.J. had dumb lawyers, he would have been in jail a lot longer than he has been already. OJ's lawyers.
So by having good lawyers and very expensive lawyers and smart lawyers,
and really dumb opposing lawyers. Yeah. His opposing lawyers let a lot of crap get through, and the judge let a lot of crap
really
get through.
Bad judge.
So this whole panel is actually about how we should hire you.
Yes, I've cards.
I'm up for that.
I'll come and lecture. I don't do that.
Yeah, the lawyers will tip the balance. You know, it's not going to be 300 where 300 brave lawyers are going to beat back the Persian armada of lawyers.
I'd hire the Persian armada if I were hiring.
Agreed.
I'm just saying, red cloaks. But you know, if you're in a close case, if you're in a case where you just get lucky and have a bad opposing side, good lawyers will tip the balance.
Absolutely.
Good lawyers are also really good at avoiding trouble. If you have a good lawyer and you talk to them and you listen to them, like us, then they will look at your situation and go, that's a problem. We need to fix that ahead of time. And that's one of the things about Google. Google has good lawyers. Google listens to their lawyers.
Google owns lawyers. They don't have to rent them. They've got in-house lawyers who spend their lives, the corporate lawyers who work on the side that I work on. We don't go to trial. We try to avoid trials. So it's problem solving before the problem occurs. It's meant to be preemptive strike against things. So people in any large corporation, you've got an entire legal department whose job is to review everything the company's doing and make sure none of it is dangerous, which is why if you have any good ideas, you send them to legal who kills them. Because legal's job is to look at it and say, oh, that might be risky. We can't do that. And so we go in and tell the CEO, no, I'm sorry, that's risky. You can't do it. And we just say that's everything. Sometimes we just send holograms and say, no, I'm sorry, there's too much inherent risk. You can't do that. That's what corporate lawyers do. We're risk adverse. And so Google has a lot of really good lawyers who told it what it could and couldn't do so it can act as aggressively as it wants to, but within the bounds of the law. And that's different than Pirate Bay, who knew where the bounds of the law was and said
she didn't care,
and went well past it, intentionally and flagrantly.
Yeah. Back with the mic.
There's these websites that let you stream live videos of whatever you want, and what if one guy has a disc with a movie on it, and he streams that movie, and there's no copy of the movie on the internet, and it's whole, you know? So would it be illegal to stream that, and would it be illegal to watch that stream?
So somebody streaming Revenge of the Fallen. I haven't seen it yet, sadly. Or maybe not. Was it? That's probably infringement on his part. He is making available a copyrighted work. The streamer, the person who's actually seeing the video on the stream, there's an intent question. There's also a context question. So let's say you log in and you click on this thing thinking it's Triumph of the Will, not copyrighted. That's horrible. New example.
Something old that's not copyrighted anyway in the public domain.
You think it's somebody's home video of their little girl riding on the tricycle. Creative Commons. And you say, this is copyrighted. Close it. You're fine. No intent. If you go to the bathroom and then you start reading a book and then you start getting a snack and you start doing all this other stuff and you come back and the movie's halfway over, you're probably still okay. You didn't have intent. Good luck proving it. But it depends on what you do. If you sit there and pop popcorn and watch the movie, I think you've infringed because you infringed.
You should have made a copy if it runs on your computer.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's no copy stored on the computer.
It doesn't.
Once it goes through, it's gone like television.
The law on that, y'all can correct me on this. I think that it's still deemed to be making a copy or infringing the performance right even. I think that they will find a way to make, even though you didn't save a copy, I think that counts.
My argument on that's going to be it's the same thing as you didn't change your usage by virtue of the fact that you just streamed it. There's conceptually no difference between streaming it and making a legal copy as far as your usage, assuming you did it. So I think it's a distinction that doesn't have a whole lot of merit.
Just because whenever you're streaming without using any third-party program, it is immediately from the computer. So as far as usage is concerned, then
But ignore what happens with the ones and zeros, and just think about what happens between your eyeballs and the screen. There's no real difference.
I have a different legal aspect of the same situation. How is this as a defense? I thought that whoever was streaming that had the right to stream that.
If you had an honest belief and not a willful disregard of facts to come to that belief, then you're probably okay.
The Waters have made money by all these sites popping up, like Hulu and all these big commercial sites that are streaming video.
And it comes down to, were you blind because just kind of happened, or were you willfully blind? If you're just sticking the blindfold on, going, I'm not listening, or not paying attention,
From a practical standpoint, you're not going to get sued for having watched it on your computer and not distributed and not actually copied it.
But
if you watched it on TV, on your computer, and it turns out that was an infringing broadcast of sorts, using old words.
But were you to actually come in front of a jury, then the jury would decide what your intent was, and it would be up to them to figure out, did you do it on purpose or not?
And then recording the stream that you believe is non-infringing, recording it to time shift.
That you're still probably okay time shifting.
Yeah.
Keep in mind also there's a distinction between criminal liability where intent is necessary and civil liability
where
intent is irrelevant.
This is true.
Sometimes. Fraud.
Okay, a different question. Off the subject.
All right.
And I just want to understand that I understand what kind of the collective thought of the group was. Is it that information is not going to be going into the public domain because Disney is going to continue to argue Mickey Mouse needs to be ours for forever? Or do you think that the copyright on Mickey Mouse is going to eventually run out when the extension comes up?
Copyright on Mickey Mouse will eventually run out.
I think
the United States may fail as a government before that, depending on how much they grease the skids in Congress, is I think what we all agree on.
Mm-hmm.
There's currently a lot of backlash against the last Copyright Extension Act. A lot of it's manufactured by a handful of academics, but they are really good at manufacturing this argument. And so a lot of people, even in Congress who don't care about it, have heard backlash as if it's real. And so there's enough argument about it right now that there's not going to be, at least I would be really surprised if there were, another copyright extension anytime in the near future. It's been extended fairly far. I mean, it went to the Supreme Court with an argument that it was an unconstitutional extension. And I think the Supreme Court made the right decision. The Constitution says it has to be limited. It doesn't say what the limit is. So it cannot be an unlimited copyright term. The Constitution provides it must be limited. Limited. Tell me what that means. 1,000 years is limited. But right now, the political environment in Congress is such that it's not going to be extended again anytime in the near future.
Yeah, Disney will try.
Oh, yeah.
Forces will marshal against Disney.
There are a lot of other content holders who really don't want their content to go away.
Thank you.
Who gets next?
I think the here.
Older gentleman?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, or the guy in the blue shirt.
Well, my question actually goes to y'all, if y'all know the answer, or actually anybody in the room. One of the things
we'll
I was
convincing.
I'm sorry.
We'll make something up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll make it happen.
It was my understanding that the way that things actually happened with Pirate Bay was that because all the big companies that owned all the copyrighted material kept going after them, and the Swedish government wouldn't do anything. Eventually, they pretty much bribed the Swedish government in order to go in Sweden to actually go in and raid them and take their servers out, and that's why now they have so many servers in other countries. Is that really what happened, or does anybody know?
That's totally plausible.
That's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, that's what we've heard.
They raided the servers, they went out and bought new ones and just put them in places that were...
Well, I know they also placed other ones in other countries now, so that way if those get raided, their server's staying up. Their site will stay up because it is registered online and it will go to other places.
They gave servers to other people, and now the owners of Pirate Bay don't even know where the servers are.
Right.
So, you know, that's another problem.
Okay, so it's just all around the rumor mill that the government was bribed. They don't really know how.
You can't really confirm or deny that.
Gotcha. Okay, that's mostly one thing I was wondering.
They also released the entire source code for the website, so anyone can just pick it up and carry it.
You can't stop it out. It'll stay up until they finally just stop it.
Yeah.
Putting it back
out. Obviously, good Lord. Obviously, Pirate Bay lost a case originally and appealed it. How strong, what are they basing their appeal on?
They don't want to go.
I mean, obviously they lost the first time and the judge said, no, that doesn't work.
They're basing their appeal in large part on exactly what you just said. I don't want to go to jail. And I can continue to pay lawyers.
But I would assume that a judge says you've got to have a legal defense, not the fact that you don't want to go to jail yet for killing Granny. I mean, you've got to have a legal reason.
You have to assert what's called a non-frivolous defense, which basically means you can't just completely pull it out of your ass, but you can come pretty close.
And the standards for how good your argument has to be vary, and again, that's a litigation question in Sweden.
I think the actual grounds are some evidence was introduced at trial that had not been disclosed to the defense ahead of time in a criminal trial.
Which,
that's a big no-no.
But
during the trial, my memory, and this is not as great as it should be, is that one of them was pretty much no big deal, and the judge let it through. The other time, the judge stopped it and refused to let that evidence in. So that sounds actually pretty good as far as the stability of that verdict. The other grounds is the bias on the part of the judge. I do not know exactly. It sounds like the judge made a comment or two that implied he came down on one side or the other of the question.
question was associated with a group that was enforced and worked towards keeping copyrights on books and all digital media.
Was associated with is a relative.
He was a member of the group.
Well, are you saying that any member of the NRA or the Brady Group shouldn't rule on a Second Amendment case?
This weakest version of the RIA,
which is probably not illegal, and
yeah, probably
does not force him to recuse himself from the case. That sort of association is not generally sufficient grounds to force a judge to recuse him or herself. Similarly, I mean, if I were a member of the ABA, which I'm not, so I've experienced way too many things, I would not be able to be held liable for the fact that they're a bunch of rabid trial lawyers.
Thank you. That was the best compliment I've gotten today.
But I mean, just because you're a member of a professional association, you're not tarred with that brush completely. And the judicial standards, otherwise, judges could never leave their homes. And no court really requires that.
To give you a rough idea, in U.S. civil cases, this is kind of stretching a little, but not that many cases get appealed, say 10%. 10% of cases that are appealed actually get reversed on appeal. So you're working with some pretty bad numbers on an appeal.
And the appeal is still fairly early there, so we don't even know how the first round of them attempting to make the appeal is going to come out. The appeal may be stopped quickly. Quickly being a relative term, of course.
Yeah.
Quickly in lawyer speak.
Yeah, quickly in lawyer speak. You know, a couple of years, decade maybe, you know, whenever we get around to it.
How a trademark registration takes a year. Nothing's fast.
Yeah, try filing a patent. It's like five.
No,
longer sometimes.
On the topic of Hulu, one of the other topics as far as the advocacy of downloading a TV show is convenience. Time swapping, or I forget.
Time shifting.
Hulu is only signed with a few networks, so you can only get certain shows to just stream on the internet whenever you want. But let's say someone wants to watch a show that's not on Hulu, just they don't own a DVR and they don't they're at work when the show shows on television. Why would they be held accountable for watching it online on a not legal source where it's not signed with a legal source?
Because it's illegal. Just because you want to do a thing doesn't mean you're allowed to.
But if there's no way to do it legally,
then
tough.
Do it.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I mean,
there's no way to kill someone legally.
Actually,
yeah.
There is.
Don't give me ideas.
Just because you want to
call capital punishment.
I have to bolt into just a moment. This may be my last very unpopular statement. Is just because you want to pirate things, just because you want to steal stuff, doesn't mean you're allowed to. And there's a. I think that the interesting question here that we haven't quite gotten to is not. Does the law allow this, but should the law allow it? And this is where I turn all academic again. No one actually pays you to have these thoughts. But the law says you can't. And so even though you really, really want to, and even though there's not any way for you to do it that's not illegal, that just means you can't, even if you want to. And people want to be able to take artwork and match it up into the audio files, and they want to do a lot of things. Just because they want to doesn't mean the law allows it.
But then where does the law infringe on the intellectual advancement of the world by doing that?
Oh, well.
Yeah, I mean, the law is what it is. You can't really argue with it.
That's why you have revolutions. That's why...
Or legislatures.
Well, first.
First.
So if it becomes unpopular, you can change the law.
Right.
The law is allowed to be changed, but the law as it stands now says, no, don't do that.
If it's a big enough deal, you can get a constitutional amendment passed.
Yeah,
but it's possible.
Stuff, this is just legal stuff.
Right.
Yeah, you can always do what I do, which is real simple. I vote with my wallet.
And you'll notice that iTunes is now changing their digital rights management because people voted with their wallet and said, this sucks, I don't want to pay for that.
Yeah.
Well, will you pay for this then?
Well, the guys on Hulu, I mean, Hulu has commercials, and they actually make money. And what happens is when I go to CBS or one of the networks, and the method that they use to distribute it and the software you have to download, and it doesn't work real well, and the commercials always work perfectly, but the show plays like crap, I have one simple solution. I just go back to Hulu. And if it's not on Hulu, fine, I won't watch your show, and you won't make any money.
And Hulu's legal posture is they get a license. They have a contract with NBC. Is it?
With several.
Okay. With the networks who do not know who they are, and the networks who own the copyright have authorized Hulu to broadcast it. It's not because we want it. Hulu has an in. It's because
Hulu signed a contract, and they're under some limitations.
Hulu didn't have a license, they just made the website, or because of the DVC or whatever, and they just get permission from them to link to it, so that way
it's okay, guys, but here's the kick in the teeth. I'm from Canada. Hulu, ABC, CBS, if I go to their websites to try and play their videos, basically I get this.
Yeah.
All right? So you have to understand that it does have effect because our copyright laws are different in Canada. So that material is unavailable, which means that the ISPs are acting to help enforce copyright laws.
Okay.
It's something from the ISPs giving them enough information to tell them I'm coming from Canada.
Oh, no, that's your IP address.
Yeah.
That's like if I call you on the phone, they look and they say, oh, caller ID, it's from Keith. That's all that's... and I can do that on my own server. I don't need an ISP to do that. Somebody...
I think we might...
Thanks.
I'm happy with the answer.
Yeah.
Yellow shirt.
Hi. If the Pirate Bay guys lose their appeal, let's say in a year from now, it finally goes back to trial, they lose, they go to jail.
Right.
Right.
They get charged all that money. Now, that does not set legal precedent in the States, is that correct?
Correct.
But are they going to try and use that anyway, or are they going to try to use that at an international level to say, like, no matter where you are, no matter where you host your server, we will find you and look what happened to these guys in Sweden? Are they going to find a way to spin that to really try to make a massive level of enforcement, do you think?
I think the point of Pirate Bay, as far as the RIA and the MPAA is you can run, but you'll just get sued tired. That sounds much better in my head. Okay, moving on. That you can try this offshore business and we'll come find you. It's already illegal in the United States. It's already illegal in Canada. It's already illegal most of Europe, I think. I'm going to go with that. So I think that was the point was, you can run, but it's not going to do any good.
When I'm on a site like Hulu and I'm using something like Adblock Plus that blocks all the ads, is that illegal because they're not making any money off of me like they intended to?
That is a practical question that the law is not well equipped to answer, because what probably is going on is ad company and Hulu have a contract. And Hulu's contract, if they're smart, says every time we transmit this commercial, we get paid 2 cents. If the fact that between your computer receiving it and your computer flashing up on the screen, something happens, then that's not Hulu's problem. So that's how that works legally. There is some discussion of, and there's cases involving a fundamentalist Christian organization that sells a device that basically puts up sensor bars and little bleeps on R-rated movies. And I don't remember exactly what it's called. And I think that was found to actually be an infringement. I think they got nailed on a bad factual pattern, so it may not hold up for very long. So it's a little bit uncertain.
That's really what it comes down to is, did you do anything necessarily wrong by blocking the ads? I can't think of anything because you're not infringing a copyright, which is what we've been talking about. I can't think of anything wrong with not doing something. All you're really doing is you're kind of hosing the party that's supposed to be streaming the commercial because they said they're going to and they're paying, money's passing hands. But that's a
fault that's a fault of the ad company writing a bad contract, letting the consumer in the end get around their ad.
Well, and it's also an issue of the technical people that put something out there that an ad blocking program can stop. And, eventually they will try another standard and then there'll be another ad blocking program,
What if that violates their licensing agreement? Would that be
their licensing agreement cannot govern your behavior. Though,
right, because
you're not
sign
part of
the contract.
Right. There's actually that device you talked about. Originally, they actually took the videos themselves and edited them, republished them, and put them out.
And they made a fair use argument at trial and lost.
So what they've done is the new device, what they do is they have a device you hook up to your player, and it has a list of the stuff that's coming up based on the time code, and it simply watches it and blocks stuff out dynamically. So they don't actually edit the original material, they just edit the presentation of the material.
And I personally think that's legal, but I can see that it could be illegal because of how it...
See,
I didn't want to say it anymore. I'm getting tired.
Yeah, because I can't really...
Well, in the use of a classic case, Citizen Kane cannot be altered. You know, Orson Welles was smart and said any presentation is his version. If you would do that to Citizen Kane for some bizarre reason, wouldn't that be altering the presentation of his classic film?
No, because Orson Welles has Orson Welles has a contract with, I think it was MGM. MGM cannot alter it because they're bound by contract. That contract tied their hands. But yeah, assuming it's legal for that device to work, you don't have a contract with Orson Welles. You don't have a contract with MGM unless MGM makes you sign a contract saying not to adjust it. So if you buy the movie, refuse to sign the contract, Orson Welles' ghost doesn't care because you're no longer a party. You're not a party to his agreement. And the contract between Orson Welles and MGM probably has a provision saying that MGM, if it sells the movie or the rights to show the movie to a theater, must include this provision, not to alter it. But to individual consumers, it's probably not in there. If it is, you would then, a lot of ifs there. If the provision is in the contract between Orson Welles and MGM saying they have to make consumers also contract not to alter it on a condition of buying it. In other words, you cannot own the movie without agreeing not to alter it. At that point, you're bound when you sign that contract. And at that point, yes, it is a violation of contract to alter the movie.
If you sign this contract.
Yeah, but they can say, all right, condition of buying this movie, you've got to sign this contract. Tough. You want to see the movie, you got to sign the contract. And you can't make them sell the movie to you on your own terms.
Right.
Could they do that on a shrink, the idea of not signing it, but a shrink wrap?
Right.
Could they do a shrink wrap license and get away with it?
I think that you can't. Legally, that's still a gray area, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends, I think, to the extent it's a contract of adhesion. I think there's a lot of arguments that can be made on that. I think that the short answer is that the corporate lawyers are going to tell them to try, and then if it becomes a problem and it's annoying them enough, they'll sue on it and just see what happens.
Because, I mean, for them, it's. But formally and technically, you cannot sign a contract you don't know you don't have an opportunity to know the contents of. In other words, you have to have a chance to read it. If you choose to or not, that's your business. So if the contract is shrink-wrapped and you have no chance to look at it until by breaking the shrink-wrap you've agreed to it, that's really dicey legally.
Yeah, I mean, there needs to at least be a copy of the contract in the DVD with it for it to really stand up.
Or the salesperson says, read this contract. You're about to agree to it.
Yeah.
That might hold up.
Or if you're a
client. Yeah, that's a whole different issue.
Not going there, unless we have to. That's not an invitation. Any other questions?
Just one last comment.
Having listened to a couple of people, it's just... I won't, you know, I think we somehow maybe want to get through to the population that it's wrong to steal people's work. I'm sorry, if you want that Beatles song, you should pay the fee to get that Beatles song. I'm sorry, that's just how I feel about it. Now, I mean, I disagree on some of the other things that the copyright holds. All my DVDs are on my computer now. I'm sorry, I own the DVDs, and I can't see how they... I know the law can say differently, but, I mean, I bought them. They're on my... And I don't give them to anybody else, and I don't share them with anybody else. They're mine. I know that the law can be different on that. But that's a different issue. I feel I've paid for it. And I think that maybe the companies need to start doing something along that direction. You know, we've tried for years to suppress certain things like smoking and so forth. And as a teacher in a school, I can tell you that kids don't smoke anywhere near what they used to smoke. And not because anybody has compelled them to not smoke, but because there's been a change in the culture that says smoking isn't right. So when I'm in my classroom and I offer something to a student, for example, I mean, I make the point, it's got to be legal for you to do this. I mean, I hold some copyrights myself, and I just distributed some things to my students and said, please, I mean, I says the copies that are coming in aren't here yet. I'm giving you these, and of course, I've also had some minor security on. I said, please don't share them with someone else. So I'm trying to change their idea of what they should be doing. You shouldn't be, I'm sorry, you shouldn't be downloading music that you didn't pay for. I am on iTunes, and when I want something, I buy it. If I don't like the price, I'll go buy it somewhere else. But I just think that that's something else that needs to be addressed, that we need to treat this with some respect as well. And I mean, almost everything here was talked about whether we can break it and do that and all that. But, you know, I know people argue the record companies get most of the money and not the performers. Well, for example, I went to see a performance very recently of Celtic Women. And now these guys, in my mind, have really broken this whole pattern. You go to the Celtic Woman site online, and it's high definition, free, available, their whole show. Why did they do that? Well, they did it for the reason that I did. They got me to go to see their show. And I paid the money to go listen to them live, and I will go pay to listen to them live again as soon as they come into my area, because I love their show. But it was all legal. So maybe we can change people a little bit.
I think one of the things that honestly has been a problem with, and don't shoot me for saying this, with the women's rights movement, the civil rights movement, and the gay rights movement, is that it has created the impression in people's minds that the courts are an instrument of social change, that you can actually socially engineer by imposing law on people. Law is crap at social engineering because the culture is going to do what it wants to do, regardless of the law. The law is there to enforce the mores and the norms of the culture. How many of y'all are from Atlanta? This is going to be a bad example, then, but tough. The main north-south artery in Atlanta is called Georgia 400. For most of its useful length, going to the suburbs, it's 55 miles an hour. Everybody drives 60 miles an hour, 65, 70 miles an hour. It's just the culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're on my insurance.
No, not
high.
Me. I don't even drive on it. I'm just saying, yeah. You're going to get passed if you're doing 70.
Yeah, there are people I see driving 55, which is the speed limit, which is legal. They are not breaking the law, but they are
probably
making,
endangering people,
yeah,
by driving
some
serious
crazy stuff going on there.
In California, there are laws for basically saying that if you drive too slowly if you drive slower than the speed of traffic, you are violating law, even if the speed of traffic is faster than the speed.
And that puts you in an opposition of, do I break the law or do I break the law?
And I guess the point where that comment was kind of going is that, you know, for instance, I'm from Mississippi. You can make whatever changes you want to in the law. There's still going to be rednecks in Mississippi. So,
what else is there?
You know, that's just the way it is. So, you know, that's not the best way to go about making change. But
Where
does copyright law and DRM conflict with antitrust law, particularly when the DRM technologies are tied up by one or two companies? They're only available on, say, Microsoft Windows computers, not on Linux computers, not on FreeBSD computers. And oh, by the way, it's illegal to re-import from other countries the code that's perfectly capable of, say, playing a movie with some DRM technology.
Do you do antitrust at all?
Not really. I guess that's part of the issue with that as well. Antitrust has not been nearly as zealously enforced since pre-80s, roughly. It's really kind of fallen out of favor in the legal community. So, I mean, it's still around, but it's just not as big of an issue as it used to be, I guess, is the cop-out answer. But
if you wish to... So, effectively, the law can mandate that if you wish, even though you have the money and you're able and you're willing to buy it, that they're able to say that we only provide blue cars and you cannot paint it another color. You know, we only sell videos that are compatible with this particular software from this particular manufacturer, and it is a crime to do any attempt to make it work on anything other than that.
Well, I guess what it comes down to is, at least classically, that may be changing a little bit, but the law has tried not to get into the private affairs of citizens, be, you know, company, person, whatever. So those antitrust laws were kind of passed for really egregious conduct, and they haven't been enforced for a while, if there's any conduct that gets egregious to enough that there's a major public outcry, maybe it will be. But, you know, as far as specifics, again, neither one of us really practice antitrust laws.
Which is kind of a specialty, which
is
why we're really hedging a lot.
Yeah.
The only thing I think I would say is that antitrust is somewhat disfavored right now, which is what we were saying earlier. And so you would have some trouble making an antitrust argument. The one against my dad worked for a chemical company, and he and a coworker of his had a very frank conversation in front of me, which basically boiled down to, how are we going to drive our competitor out of business? Well, that's an antitrust violation, technically, but it's also and dominate the market. That was the other part of
that. Okay, that's the important part.
But on the other hand, it's also, that's good business to destroy your competitors and dominate the market. And so that tension is really, that's where the litigation is. That's where the Microsoft antitrust suit in Europe was. That's what that basically was. Microsoft being a good business, but maybe also predatory, maybe not.
Yeah, in other words, just how far is too far? And that's just a question for the courts.
That's a fact question.
Yeah, it really is a fact question.
The what's interesting about this type of discussion, I work in InfoSec, and I get the DMCA takedown notices and have to enforce them. So we get talking to the students. I work at the university. And the interesting thing about that is we'll go through a discussion much like this one here today. And we'll go around the block 6 times, and they'll say, but I'm helping the artist sell more copies. And when it's all said and done, I look them in the eye and ask them one simple question. Is it yours? Do you own it? And they go, no. Well, the person who owns it has the right to determine how it's distributed, and your rights end there. You can either accept their terms or not. And that's really the only thing you have. You don't own it, they do. And when you boil it down to pretty much that simply, then the thing they go after next is, well, the copyright laws are egregious. I says, well, then become a congressman and change them. So that's really where this all boils down to. Would you agree?
Definitely. I mean, because at the end of the day, a lot of other stuff just comes down to rationalization. How can I try to find a way to do what I want to do? And I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you that the problem is not that the copyright laws are evil, it's that they have not come into line with the culture. And the culture needs to change, which might be a good thing, might be a bad thing. Good luck on making that one. Or the copyright law needs to change. But while they're in conflict, that's not the fault of copyright law. That's the fault of people not doing their job in Congress.
That's kind of the fault of life, I guess you could say, if there is a fault. It is. But
kind of like everyone's speeding, eh?
Everyone's what?
Everyone's speeding.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of a problem that is.
So if everyone's doing it, then the law changes by
de facto? No.
No, I mean, you can make a waiver argument, but that's kind of weak.
Like
that's wacky.
They discussed it in the news media all the time about banning use of cell phones while driving. And I say to my wife, I said, they can ban it all they want. It's not going to stop it.
Right.
Yeah. It's not going to stop it at all. It's not going to have almost any, it's not almost going to have no impact because it's a conflict between the culture and, yeah, we all agree it's a bad thing to use the cell phone while driving, but people are going to do it anyway.
The only thing it's going to do is generate revenue.
Yeah.
The only thing it's going to do is generate revenue for local police forces and piss citizens off.
Well, there is a legitimate safety issue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
seatbelt laws.
Seatbelt laws.
Same thing. I don't wear my seatbelt, and I shouldn't be forced to wear my seatbelt. I mean, yes, it's unsafe to drive without your seatbelt. I realize that. But there shouldn't be a law that gives me a $10 ticket that says, you know, you need to wear your seatbelt, whatever.
Convince 50% plus one of your congressmen.
Right.
To agree, and that is a basic flaw of democracy, is that we don't all 100% agree with each other, and the majority wins. But that's the point of the Constitution, is majority can't win in certain defined situations.
We're not a democracy.
Okay,
representative.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think you would get 50% plus one of the population to agree that if you want to endanger your own life, you should
Well, but the problem with speeding is you may be endangering others. Now, seatbelts is a little different.
Yeah.
Then it's like you can make arms.
Yeah, if you're inside your car, it's laying on my windshield.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I thought the law was for seatbelts is like that you could fly out of your car if you collide and your body could do damage.
And that's good logic.
And that's what legislatures are for, sit there and go, all right, what are all the factors we got to look at? Let's
I'm
talk
just saying.